DeSanto, I saw on TV, said he's averaging 20 points a match. I mean, that's a high pace. That's a high, high pace. So we got to keep it going. We got Penn State next week. You know, we're going to get on a plane and we're going to fly into State College and we're going to be without 165 and we're going to be without 157, but we still got a 65 pounder and we got a 57 pounder.
What's up? Hello, everybody. Welcome to In the Room, a wrestling podcast from the Des Moines Register. I'm Cody Goodwin, the Register's wrestling writer, and I am glad you're here. Welcome to the Weekend Freestyle, a recap of the Iowa wrestling weekend that was. Got a pretty full show here for you guys today. The Hawkeyes beat both Purdue and Ohio State, despite growing COVID-19 issues. Iowa State also went 2-0 against the Dakota teams, and welcome back some familiar faces to the starting lineup as well. And the Northern Iowa picked up a lopsided win over Northern Illinois, plus high school sectionals took place this weekend for Class 2A and 1A. And oh, by the way, regional duels are this week. So again, another busy weekend on the mats here in the state of Iowa. So let's just kick things off right there at the top with Tom Brands and the Iowa Hawkeyes, who swept the Sunday doubleheader over the Boilermakers and Ohio State in West Lafayette. They beat Purdue 31-18, and then they beat the Buckeyes 33-14. Lots to take away from this day, so why don't we start with the wrestling portion of it. The Hawkeyes were pretty much the Hawkeyes, you guys. They won 13 of 20 total matches against both Purdue and Ohio State, 6 of 10 against the Boilermakers, who are now 2-5, and then 7 of 10 against the Buckeyes, who are now 5-2. So I believe Ohio State beat Purdue in the third duel of that triangular. Of the 13 total wins from the Hawkeyes, 6 pins, 3 technical falls, 1 major decision. That is a lot of bonus points, guys. Both Jay Nierman and Tony Cassiope went 2-0 with 2 pins. Nierman pinned Purdue's Parker Phileas and Ohio State's Anthony Echemendia. Cassiope pinned Purdue's Darian Keyes and Ohio State's 10th-ranked Tate Orndorff. Cassiope, by the way, 3-0 with 3 pins since losing to Gable Steveson. Austin DeSanto also went 2-0, but he had 2 technical falls and actually outscored his opponents 42-12. So when you can outscore your opponents both by 30 points combined, I'd say you had a pretty good day. Spencer Lee only wrestled against Ohio State, but he recorded his 4th first period pin of the year over Brady Kuntz. Michael Kemmer pinned Purdue freshman Emil Solem. I probably butchered that name. I apologize. Max Mirren added a 19-3 technical fall over Purdue's Trey Cruz. And Jacob Warner beat Ohio State's 24th-ranked Chase Singletary 11-1 major decision in his second match of the day. That's largely how Iowa won both of these duels, guys, because of all that firepower. Purdue actually led 5-0 in their duel after Devin Schroeder beat Aaron Cashman by technical fall. That opened the duel, and then Iowa only led 16-15 after both Kendall Coleman and Garrett Nijen Hughes won by major decision and by pin respectively at 57 and 65. Then it was only 22-18 Hawkeyes after Max Lyon beat Nelson Brand 6-1 at 184, but then Cameron and Cassiope both scored pins, and that helped Iowa pull away a little bit. Against Ohio State, Iowa kept their distance quite a bit. They were able to keep their distance a little bit more. They actually raced out to a 17-0 lead because Spencer pinned, DeSanto Tech, Ironman pinned, and then it became 17-14 Iowa after the next 3 matches all went to the Buckeyes. Sammy Sasso pinned Max Mirren late in the third period at 149. Maybe not entirely indicative of that match. Sasso led 5-3 in the third period when Mirren shot in, and Sasso scrambled his way into a cradle, not unlike how Ironman does his sometimes. But hey, throughout the match, Mirren really showed the ability to scramble. He took plenty of shots throughout the match, you know, because when they're both standing in neutral, Sasso, there are holes there that wrestlers can shoot in on, but Sasso is just so dang tough to finish on. That's usually the issue. You'll remember Iowa's Pat Lugo learned that lesson the hard way last year, losing in the duel, the Iowa-Ohio State duel, but then he adjusted and was able to figure out how to score against Sasso and ended up beating him at the Big Ten Championship. So we'll see, I suppose, if Mirren can do the same this year. At 157 pounds, we got a glimpse of true freshman Brettley Reyna, the Florida native who stepped in for Caleb Young at 157 pounds. More on that in just a second. Reyna wrestled Elijah Cleary, scored the first takedown, actually, but then he gave one up later in the first period and then ended up losing 4-3. I thought Reyna wrestled pretty well overall, especially defensively. There were a couple times where he was able to really fight well off of Cleary's shots, and there was including one in the second period on the edge with short time. I was really impressed with that. You know, he needs a little work offensively. You know, they were neutral in the third period. He's down 130 seconds left. There wasn't really a lot of offensive action there. You know, kind of would have wanted to see a little bit more out of that. But, you know, again, true freshman, he'll learn things like that. That followed 165. That's what followed. Ethan Smith beat Zach Axmier 18-3 to make it 17-14. Iowa with 4:08 left. The Hawkeyes were able to reassume control from then on. Kemmer beat Caleb Romero 3-1. That was a top four matchup. Kemmer number one, Romero number four. Nelson Brands bounced back with a win over Rocky Jordan at 184, 3-0. Scored a takedown the first period. Then Warner and Cassiope closed with a major and a pin. That was the wrestling part of it. Iowa took care of business. Says a lot about how good this Iowa wrestling team is when two All-Americans aren't in the lineup and then another one sits during one duel in the same day of a doubleheader. And the Hawkeyes can still win both of those by pretty substantial margins, right? The other part of yesterday that stuck out was obviously Iowa's growing COVID-19 issues. Last Sunday when the Hawkeyes thumped Illinois, the program announced that Alex Marinelli had entered the COVID-19 protocols. Then last week, head coach Tom Brands tested positive for COVID-19. And then on Sunday, before the first duel, Iowa announced that Caleb Young has also entered the COVID-19 protocols. This growing number of issues, guys, not ideal for an Iowa team that's taking aim at its first NCAA team title in more than a decade. A reckoning likely awaits if those issues continue to grow, but on Sunday, the absences didn't much matter on the team scores. The Hawkeyes are now 5-0 this season. They've won 18 straight duels. That's 13-0 last year, plus the first five this year. A road date with number three Penn State is up next. We talked to head coach Tom Brands, who watched the duels from his home in Iowa City. We were able to get him on the phone afterwards. Got to talk to him about all of this, all of the action when it came to the actual wrestling, and a little bit more afterward on Sunday. Pretty brief, but here's what he had to say about his team's performance.
Hawkeye coach Tom Brands joining us via Zoom. Coach, you there? Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Excellent. A little bit different, I bet. Same boat as us, watching this from afar. What'd you think from being able to see these guys sitting in your own living room here today?
I think that wrestling's wrestling, and what wins big matches. I don't think there's a lot of drama in the fact that, you know, Tom Brands has COVID and he was watching this from home. That's number one. Number two, you go out and you wrestle and you do your job, and that's what they did. Not an easy trip. You know, and forget about whether or not, you know, Marinelli's not on the team or Caleb Young tests positive in the middle of the trip or whatever. It's just the different things that are thrown at you as you're going down the path to get ready to compete. So it's COVID, man. Good. Makes us better. Our guys responded well.
I was going to say, a lot of bonus points. You look, Ironman, a couple of falls. Cassiope, a couple of falls. Guys were coming out, and they were thinking of scoring and building leads most of the way. A couple of those, we talked a little bit about it last week. You know, we saw Nelson and Jacob Warner didn't look as great in the third period. Their first match, both those guys bounced back a little bit. Did you see anything in particular that kind of attributes to that, those second matches being a little better results than the first time around?
Well, I think you got to let it fly. And Nelson Brands in particular, you know, there wasn't much of a, you know, there wasn't much of a offense display in that first match. And these matches cannot be wrestled down the stretch like that. And we all know that. And we gotta pick it up. Am I concerned? Like, is it like DEFCON, whatever? No. But even the match where he went out and shot a left-handed high crotch, gets a takedown, rides the guy out. I mean, keep pouring it on there. And there just seems to be a little bit of lackadaisical with Nelson. Warner, you know, I don't know how you talk about that. You got to freaking be ready to go. You got to be ready to wrestle 7 minutes. And if you run out of steam, you got to find a way to persevere. And, you know, I don't know if he didn't get ready to go right or what. So I'll tell you what, the biggest thing for me is, you know, you're going in there and you have these matchups where You know, Young's out, Marinelli's out, Lee's out, and you're in a hole, but you don't have to be, but you're in a hole, and then these guys just go out and they wrestle, and that's just ice cold. That's really, really a good sign of a seasoned competitor, Ironman. You know, like you talked about, big bonus points. Spencer Lee, bonus points. DeSanto, I saw on TV, said he's averaging 20 points a match. I mean, that's a high pace. That's a high, high pace. So we got to keep it going. We got Penn State next week. You know, we're going to get on a plane and we're going to fly into State College and we're going to be without 165 and we're going to be without 157, but we still got a 65 pounder and we got a 57 pounder.
Hey, Coach, Ironside here. Just real quick. Before I let you go, 149 Max Mirren against Sammy Sasso. You know, good, tight, close match there. Mirren's getting in on that shot probably four or five times, maybe went to the well one too many times there. Just talk a little bit about that match. You know, if someone just pulls up the score, sees that he got pinned right there without knowing how the match went, how you look at that as a, from a coaching standpoint, and then what you have to build off of that for the next time that he wrestles Sammy Sasso.
The biggest thing with Mirren is that he's got a realize that he does not have to keep his hands locked. When I get deep penetration on that shot, I can post and drive up and get angles and really, really force a living in that position. And we're locking our hands until it gets slow. And we lock our hands until it limits us. And then the guy gets the corner on us and it's a dangerous position. We do talk about it. So that's what he's got to do. You're going to have to, against these better guys, you're going to have to get, you know, two hands to the leg, and then you're going to have to be able to post and drive up and through the guy's hips and or come up underneath him and lift, you know, two hands on one leg without, you know, being extended. And it was like a hang on, and you just can't hang on there, as you know, and, you know, that's what happened. And it was, right, it wasn't an adjustment necessarily. It was, you know, you need to make the adjustment there because it happened, you know, where there's a stalemate and there was a takedown and, you know, and then we ended up getting pinned there. But you need to make adjustments there. It's a hard position, but it's a critical position. It's a tough position to be in, but it's a critical position. And when you just lock your hands and, you know, you just try to horse it in there, you're going to have a hard time getting that angle. And if you can post and release a little bit and, you know, just drive up into it, just get the weight off a little bit and then, you know, shrug your shoulder underneath and get your hips underneath and those types of things. And that's a lot of detail there. But
that's perfect. That's what we want to know. That's what we want to hear. And that's, like you said, too, it's a hard position. It's not a super easy trick. It's not a situation where, you know, you really feel comfortable there. You just kind of, between the years, just get tough in the situation where you post up and it ain't going to be easy, but you got to make it happen. And the good news is he's getting into that shot, and I feel good about that match coming up in the future. So,
excuse me. All right. We're going to open up the question. Sit tight, Tom. Grace and Ironside have signed off, so anyone else that has a question for Tom, now's the time to speak up. Just raise your hand and I'll call on you. Tom, first question from Cody Goodwin.
Hey, Coach, hope you're feeling all right. What was the experience like for you watching this remotely from home on the broadcast? That had to have been pretty weird for you.
It's not different. It's wrestling, high-level wrestling wins high-level positions and, you know, hustle wins scrambles and so on and so forth. I don't really get caught up into the, I was a freak and I was out of control, you know. It was very calm and it was watching high level wrestling and making sure. Hello? And making sure that. And making sure that, you know, we're getting better as we go forward. And these guys, I tell you, you know, we had some backups in there and I think they can probably do a little better job than what they're showing. And but they didn't, and there was a lot of bonus points scored by us, but there was a lot of bonus points scored by our opponent as well. And So, you know, credit to Ironman and DeSanto and, you know, Mirren in that Purdue duel and, you know, Kemmerer and Cassiope getting two falls. And, you know, credit those guys for knowing that, you know, we had a little bit of a deficit with our lineup. So, you know, there's two issues there. You want your backups to, you know, represent a little better, but tell you what, the guys that had to step up, you know, they had to step up. And they did.
On the next question from Chris Werner.
Hi, Coach. I'm just wondering about Cassiope. I know he took that early season loss to Stevenson, but he's got two falls today and has been undefeated since then. What improvements have you seen from him?
Well, three falls in a row. If you recall my comments about Tony Cassiope, we're very high on him. We're going to have to, you know, do some things that are extraordinary to take out a guy like Stevenson. But just because you have to do something extraordinary doesn't mean that it can't happen. And so we're on track and we're moving the right direction and we're not sucking our thumb. And, you know, he's been a professional about moving forward every step of the way.
We'll run quickly through you and I in Iowa State. Panthers and Cyclones easily dispatched all of their opponents this weekend. The Panthers, they beat Northern Illinois on Friday night, and then the Cyclones won both of their duels on Sunday as well. They beat North Dakota State and South Dakota State. So how about we start with the Panthers? They beat Northern Illinois 27-9, one of those duels where they won the first four matches and then they won the last three. They're now 4-2 overall this season. So 7-10 overall against Northern Illinois. Two pins in a major decision, though. Brody Teske and Kyle Biscaglia both had the falls at 125 and 133. That put the Panthers up 12-0. Biscaglia actually beat former Iowa High School wrestler star, you guys might remember this name, Bryce West. West actually led 4-2 in the first period, but then Biscaglia rallied to lead 11-4 before scoring a pin in the third period. Drew Bennett and Tristan Lehrer both followed with decision victories at 41 and 49. That put the Panthers up 18-0 after four waits. Really good start. Kind of figured that this is how this might go. Northern Illinois took the next three. They closed within 18-9. You know, Anthony Gibson, he scored two takedowns and beat Cade Lara 7-3. Isaac Alejnik beat Pat Schoenfelter 6-4. That was a top 25 matchup at 165, guys. Alejnik, he's ranked 19th. Schoenfelter's 25th. That's according to Track Wrestling. Pat actually scored the first takedown in the first period. He came out real aggressive, looked good, but then Alejnik, you know, he kept his gas tank intact, really. You know, he came back with takedowns in the second and third period, ended up winning that one. 174 pounds, Mason Kaufman, he edged Lance Runyon 4-3. Kaufman, takedown in the first period, then he scored a reversal in the third. Runyon created opportunities, he got in on plenty of shots throughout the match, but just one of those matches where he couldn't finish, you know? Tough loss, especially considering since he's been wrestling really, really well. So Northern Illinois takes those three, makes it 18-9, and then the Panthers rolled through the final three weights to seal this victory. Parker Kekeisen, guys, another tremendous win for him at 184 pounds. This time, come from behind 8-5 win over Britt Wilson, who's ranked 12th nationally, defending MAC champ, another NCAA qualifier. Wilson actually led 5-2, a couple of takedowns in the first period, escaped to start the second, and then Kekeisen, takedown in the second period, scored another one in the third, added riding time as well. That's his third win over a previous NCAA qualifier this season, guys. I don't believe he's given that spot at 184 pounds back. You know, Track Wrestling had him ranked 10th this week. I thought that was a little high, but you know, considering he's beaten, you know, Dakota Gear, Britt Wilson, Wyatt Kohling, I believe was the other qualifier he's beaten this year. He looked really, really good against Darian Roberts from Oklahoma, who I know is a pretty tough customer. You know, this is kind of, I know a lot of people were really excited about Parker Kekeisen. I was really excited about watching him. Great to finally see him in the lineup and really kind of find this groove that he's been on. So I know that the Panther train and Doug Schwab absolutely thrilled about the way he's been wrestling lately. His entry into the lineup, actually, and then you combine that with Tyrell Gordon's continued struggles, that allowed Keegan Moore, who started the year at 184, if you guys will remember, Keegan Moore now has bumped up to 97 the last couple of duels. And guys, he looked pretty good on Friday. He scored 4 takedowns in an 11-3 major decision over 22nd-ranked Gage Braun. So Moore, he was spry, he was active, he was efficient with his shot selection. 2 takedowns in the first first period, and then 2 more in the third period, the last of which he took Braun to his back to score 2 backs. That helped secure the major decision. So really good stuff there from Keegan Moore. He may not be giving that spot back if he continues to wrestle like that. So maybe something to monitor there moving forward. Carter Isley then came out and closed the duel with a very solid 4-1 win at heavyweight. Very workmanlike performance overall from the Panthers on Friday night in DeKalb. Really nice win for them. That's kind of how we thought it would go, and they were able to take care of business. So that's important. On Sunday, the Cyclones went 2-0 to move to 8-2 overall. They notched wins over North Dakota State and South Dakota State. The biggest takeaway, I thought at least, was the return of a handful of familiar faces, right? Jarrett Dagan, Sam Colbrey, Marcus Coleman. They all returned to Iowa State's starting lineup during this doubleheader against the Dakotas. Dagan went 2-0, had a 12-3 major decision over North Dakota State's Jaden Van Manen, and then an 8-3 win over South Dakota State's Hunter Marco. Overall, he scored 7 total takedowns. He didn't allow any. He wrestled all the way through position. Look pretty solid overall, guys. Tougher competition obviously awaits, but it was really good to see him back competing again. Tim Colbrey, he just wrestled once, but he scored a couple of takedowns in a 6-2 win over South Dakota State's Jacob Schoen at 184. Interestingly enough, Joel Shapiro got the other match at 184, and he beat North Dakota State's Michael Nelson 4-1. So those two guys appear to be fully back in the mix for the Cyclones. We'll see how that gets sorted out in the coming weeks. And then Marcus Coleman ended up getting both matches at 197 this weekend. I thought he wrestled pretty well, too. Rolled up 3 takedowns and just a crap ton of turns in a 19-4 technical fall over North Dakota State's Owen Pence. And then he wrestled and lost to South Dakota State's Tanner Sloan, 7-3. He's pretty dang good. We know him, right? He's a top 10 wrestler at 197. Sloan had a couple of takedowns. Coleman had one of his own in the second period. Sloan added an escape, 2 stall points to win that one. Sloan just holds position so freaking well, guys. I know we talked about this with South Dakota State assistant coach Cody Caldwell on the last podcast before the weekend, just about Tanner Sloan's just now that he can solely focus on wrestling. It's amazing how much better he's gotten over the last few years. And you know, him and Marcus Coleman, you know, they both grew up as Iowa kids, and I'm sure they probably crossed paths in some capacity, but you know, to see Tanner Sloan still ascending, it seems like, you know, really, really fun to kind of watch him, you know, an Albernette grad doing things. And when it comes to D1 wrestling, Marcus Coleman, though, again, I didn't think he looked bad against Sloan. Sloan's just a really tough customer. And, you know, I think Coleman can probably take a match like that and learn quite a bit from it moving forward. Can maybe, you know, take some strides forward before we hit the Big 12 championships in March. You know, the other thing about 197 is, you know, I've said this nationally, that it seems like a pretty wide open weight, and especially in the Big 12, man, this weight is bananas. I think anybody could win it on any given day. You know, a guy like Marcus, guys like Tanner Sloan, you know, guys like Keegan Moore, maybe if he wrestles the way he has been lately, you know, Oklahoma State's AJ Ferrari, West Virginia's Noah Adams, you know, Noah Adams lost this weekend after, you know, he had won, I think, like 36, 37 straight matches or something like that. So just absolutely bananas weight in the Big 12 conference. That weight alone is going to probably be worth the price of admission if Tulsa is going to allow fans in to watch the Big 12 wrestling championship. So, you know, outside of that, now that I'm off my 197-pound soapbox there a little bit. The Cyclones, I mean, they just look solid overall this weekend, guys. They cruised over North Dakota State. They won that duel 32-6. They won 9 of 10 matches. You know, in addition to Dagan's major and Coleman's technical fall, David Carr and Julian Broderson both added major decisions as well. David Carr beat Jared Franek at 157 pounds. Franek is a top 15 guy at that weight. David Carr just rolled up oodles of takedown, 16-5 win there. You know, he's continuing to distance himself from the rest of that weight. So it'll be really kind of interesting to see him match up with, you know, when we get there, you know, the Hayden Hidleys, the Ryan Deacons, maybe even Caleb Young, whenever he is able to come back from the protocol system that he's in right now. South Dakota State, though, put up a much tougher fight. Cyclones had to win 6 of 10 matches to win that duel. And Jackrabbits actually led 6-0 to start this duel. Danny Vega, who's a former Cyclone wrestler, he beat Aiden Reeves 14-8 at 125 pounds. And then Zach Price, a Johnston grad, he beat Zach Redding 4-2 at 133. Iowa State won the next four matches. Ian Parker, Dagan, Carr, Isaac Judge, that put them up 13-6. Then they split the last four matches. Cade King beat Julian Broderson 6-3 at 74. Cole Bray won. Tanner Sloan beat Coleman, and then Gannon Gremmel beat Blake Wolters in overtime, 5-2 in the second tiebreaker. That one literally almost went all the way to the end of the match, or at least as far as a match can go when it comes to overtime. So he closed that one down at heavyweight. The final again, 19-12, Iowa State. Up next for both the Cyclones and the Panthers is a Valentine's Day quadrangular at Hilton Coliseum, where they'll both wrestle number 7 Arizona State, number 22 Northern Colorado, and then at long last they will finally wrestle each other. We're finally going to get the Iowa State-Northern Iowa duel. That's next Sunday in Ames. Giddy up, you guys, because that one should be a fun one. The first step of the Iowa High School postseason took place this weekend, sectionals for Class 1A and 2A. We aren't going to dive too deep into these weeds, but there were a few things that stuck out that I'd like to touch on this show. And let's start here, guys. Why do we need to even have sectionals anymore? And I ask this as a real legitimate question. The postseason works like this, for those who don't know. The top two finishers from each sectional move to districts, and that makes sense if only some of these smaller classes, there's a lot of schools that sometimes make up an entire district. The problem, though, is that the numbers have fallen so much that there's really no need for this extra postseason step anymore. I would argue that we could probably just go straight to districts, which is exactly how Class 3A does it. That's exactly how a lot of other states do it. I think it's time for Iowa to maybe start considering that, because think of this. No one weight at any sectional over this past weekend in either 1A or 2A had any more than 8 total wrestlers in a bracket. In fact, there were only 2 brackets across the entire state at sectionals, so 16 sectionals per 2 classes. That's 32 separate tournaments. Only 2 brackets had a total of 8 wrestlers in a single weight, and that was Class 1A Sectional 11, where both 113 and 138 had exactly 8 wrestlers. That's according to Track Wrestling. Every other weight in every other sectional had no more than 7 wrestlers. On top of that, there were 10 total sectional brackets that had just 2 wrestlers. So literally those 2 guys just had to show up and make weight, and they were moving on to districts. There were 4 of them in Class 2A, 6 of them in Class 1A, and there were 4 weights at Class 1A Sectional 15 alone that had just 2 wrestlers. That's bananas, guys. To me, that says, again, we can skip sectionals and combine them to hold just districts the weekends of the state championship, the weekend before the state championships. No bracket would be bigger than 16 guys. You can literally knock that out in a single day. Some people might argue that the Iowa High School Athletic Association doesn't want to give up the gate from 2 separate competitions. Okay, so you can make districts a Friday and Saturday tournament. That's how we used to do it in Missouri. I'm pretty sure that's how they still do it, and it works quite well. Let's see if we can make it happen here. That frees up an extra week at the end of the season. What could we possibly fill that with? I'm asking this sarcastically, because we could probably move all the regional duels and then state duels into that week to start with. You could have regional duels contested on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You could have the state duel competitions on Friday and Saturday. Saturday or just Saturday. That's an idea. You know, if we don't want to do that, we could add an extra week to the regular season as like a makeup week in case some competitions or duels get snowed out, or this year get COVID-19 precaution. You know, we couldn't, contest certain tournaments or certain duels because of COVID-19 issues. You know, or maybe teams just want to take that extra week off in order to rest up for the postseason. We could make that week the conference championship week if we're hell-bent on making that a thing. The options and opportunities here are endless, guys, if we dump sectionals, and we should. There's no reason for this extra step outside of just doing what we've always done. That's not how we grow this thing and evolve. I think we should change it. I know others feel the same way and others disagree. That's fine. Let's discuss it more. You guys know where I'm at on social media. Let's chat. I'm curious to hear what you all have to say. As for the sectional results themselves, the primary thing I normally look for is how many kids from the bigger teams, like the actual strong contenders, advanced to districts, and if there were any upsets. And from that standpoint, here's what I did see. Class 1A, both Don Bosco and Lisbon, they're both the top two contenders in Class 1A. The Dons are number one, Lisbon's number two. That's according to IA Russell's latest Class 1A rankings. They both pushed 12 guys through to districts. Pretty good, right? So did Logan Magnolia, who's ranked fourth, who, like I've said before, is a team that I think you guys really need to pay attention to in Class 1A. They're pretty good. West Sioux is ranked third. They pushed just six guys through, as did fifth-ranked New London, as well as Woodbury Central. That's another team you guys should probably keep an eye on. The biggest upset in Class 1A, I thought, came at 182 pounds. Second-ranked Carson Linett, that's from West Sioux. He lost by fall to Woodbury Central's Ty Dennison, who is unranked in the sectional finals. Both those guys advanced to district, so perhaps we see a rematch next Saturday. In Class 2A, a lot of the same. You kind of saw a lot of the top dogs do what they were supposed to do. West Delaware continued its impressive redemption tour by pushing 13 guys through to districts. The Hawks are ranked number one for a reason and have continued to show it each week this season. Behind them, second-ranked Crestwood, they have nine guys through to districts. Third-ranked Osage qualified 11. Fourth-ranked West Burlington Notre Dame, they got seven through to districts. And then Davenport Assumption, they're ranked fifth, but they qualified 12 out of the same sectional as West Burlington Notre Dame. So that might be something to watch next weekend as we head into districts. Had a couple of upsets in Class 2A. Osage's top-ranked Nick Fox, he lost by fall to Clarion Goldfield Dow's Remington Hansen. Fox ranked number one, Hansen ranked number seven. They both still advanced. And then West Burlington's Griffin Mole, who's ranked second at 152, he lost by fall to Assumption's unranked Parker Torones. Both of them also advanced to districts as well. So Knights may have been able to sneak somebody through that otherwise maybe shouldn't have, according to the seeds. Pretty good for them moving forward. Districts for all three classes are set for Saturday, February 13th. Before that, though, we've got regional duels this week, guys. Class 1A and 2A regional duels, they're going to go Tuesday, February 9th. Your top eight seeds in Class 1A are Don Bosco, Lisbon, Logan Magnolia, Lake Mills, Woodbury Central, West Sioux, West Hancock, and MFL Marmac. Your top eight for Class 2A, West Delaware, Crestwood, Osage, Assumption, Independence, Winterset, Sergeant Bluff, Luton, and Creston. Again, 2A, 1A, that's on Tuesday, February 9th. Class 3A's regional duels, those are set for Wednesday, February 10th. Your top eight seeds are Waverly, Shell Rock, Southeast Polk, Waukee, Fort Dodge, Bettendorf, Norscott, Norwalk, and Linmar. Should be a fun couple of days. The winners, of course, will advance to the state duels championships, which will run all day on Wednesday, February 17th at Wells Fargo Arena here in Des Moines. And then the winners from the district tournaments on Saturday will advance to the traditional state championships. That's February 18th, 19th, and 20th, also at the Well. One final note here before we sign off today. We had some unfortunate news come out of Division III last week. I'm sure you guys probably saw it. The NCAA Administrative Committee, acting on behalf of the Division III Management and President's Council, approved the recommendation from the Division III Championships Committee to cancel all winter sports championships for the 2021 academic year. That, of course, includes wrestling. Their reasoning was because of the low athletic participation among all Division III winter sports. During its review of the data, the Championships Committee determined participation numbers in all nine winter sports were well below the established threshold to provide a national championship experience. These established thresholds are a little weird and arbitrary, but here's what they said they were. 60% of the schools needed to participate in men's and women's basketball, men's and women's swimming and diving, men's and women's indoor track and field, and then 70% for men's and women's ice hockey and wrestling. So if you're thinking specifically of wrestling, they hit 61.8% of the threshold. You do the math real quick, that means about 67 schools were wrestling this year. 70% means they needed about 76 schools to wrestle. So they were literally nine teams shy of being able to hold a Division III national championship. That sucks, especially after last year's national championship was canceled due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, one day before the tournament was literally supposed to start in Cedar Rapids. Really sucks, right? Here's the cool part. The announcement came on February 3rd from the NCAA. 2 days later, USA Wrestling makes their own announcement that they are going to provide a national competition for the NCAA's Division III wrestling programs. That's pretty freaking awesome. Here's what USA Wrestling Executive Director Rich Bender said, quote, USA Wrestling is extremely disappointed and heartbroken about the hundreds of wrestling student athletes who have lost their opportunity to have a 2021 season-ending competition due to the cancellation of winter sports national championships at the NCAA Division III level. This is the second second straight year that this important group of student athletes will not have an official national tournament. As the national governing body for wrestling in the United States, we feel we have an obligation and responsibility to provide a competition for these athletes. We are poised to step into the breach on behalf of Division III wrestlers. We have been actively pursuing a number of options that are available to us, working with our partners and stakeholders within the sport. It is our goal to provide a high-quality event for these athletes during this academic season. USA Wrestling has been able to successfully host numerous competitions at many levels using its COVID-19 return to events guidelines and following local health and government regulations, end quote. Here is what USA Wrestling President Bruce Baumgartner also said in the same release. USA Wrestling believes that creating a season-ending tournament for the NCAA Division III wrestling student-athletes fits in line with our mission to, quote, provide quality opportunities for its members to achieve their full human and athletic potential, end quote. We clearly understand the role that the NCAA Championships plays in the lives of these students. USA Wrestling is eager to help and believe we have both the resources and ability to assist during this challenging time for the wrestlers and their families. Again, freaking awesome. Kudos to USA Wrestling for stepping up for the Division III wrestlers who deserve so much better than what the NCAA doled out last week. Can't wait to see what becomes of this. I think it'll be pretty awesome to watch unfold. That's all we've got today, guys. Thanks a bunch for listening. Be sure to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your shows. Follow me on Twitter at Cody Goodwin or on Instagram at Cody J. Goodwin. Always love communicating with you guys. And be sure to also subscribe to the Des Moines Register to catch all my stories, mailbags, analysis, and videos. You can find a link to do all of that as well as stories from this past week in the show notes. That's it for this episode. Thanks again for listening, guys. We will talk again soon.